You are listening to station WMKV 89.3 FM. This is Mort Zemski with another program of Around the World with Mort, a program about interesting people who do interesting things. How many people do you know who own their own 18-hole golf course? Who would have the talent, the financial clout, and the dream to own an 18-hole golf course? In my opinion, not many people. Today our guest is Jeff Osterfeld, who just happens to own his own 18-hole golf course. Let's learn from him how, when, where, why he did this. Jeff, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Mort.
Let's get a little background on you. Do you have a day job besides the golf course?
I do.
What do you do?
It's my paying job, actually. I work with Penn Station. We're headquartered here in Cincinnati. It was founded and originated in 1985 in Cincinnati.
By who?
Well, I did that.
That's what I thought. So that's your day job. You are in charge of Penn Station restaurants. They're very good, by the way. Okay. And then how many restaurants you have?
We have 151 as of last Monday.
And you've got time to go build a golf course.
Yes, I hired a president about 6 years ago. He's turned out to be a swell fella.
Okay.
Does his job well, thank the Lord. And yes, that gave me the time to go build a golf course.
Okay. Is building this golf course a dream or an investment?
Both.
Both. What came first?
Oh, absolutely, the dream.
Yeah, well, something had to start it. Where did you come up with this idea?
That's a hard question. You know, it bounced around in my head. I started playing golf right out of school, right out of college in the early 80s.
Uh-huh.
And shortly thereafter, became infatuated with the idea of designing my own. I think I have a creative itch I must need to scratch.
Well, knowing you, you do. Also, you can't sit still.
That's true. I hate to admit that's true, but it is.
Okay. What is the name of the golf course?
It's Stoneleg Hills.
And where is it?
It's on Route 50, about 6 or 7 miles east of I-275.
And how big is this course?
It's 273 acres, 18 holes, and about 7,100 yards.
That's a pretty good sized golf course.
It's a very big, long golf course.
You never thought of starting with a miniature golf course?
No, I always think big.
You sure do. Okay, that's great. That's why you're successful. Okay, is the golf course the whole 273 acres?
No, it isn't. Most golf courses average about 140 acres. So we have a lot of open ground and and holes that are 100% wooded. They have woods all around them. And will never be developed.
Do you know who likes you? The golf ball manufacturers.
You aren't kidding.
Woods all around them?
Well, that and lakes. You've seen the lakes. So, yeah, those gather a lot of golf balls.
You going to build any houses around them?
We'll have a few, probably 15 to 20 homes in the future. There's a couple under construction as we speak. But those are all off the golf course by and large and will be out of view as you play golf.
Which is a nice thing for the people living there.
We hear that a lot from people, that the course itself feels like a resort course compared to many others, and part of that is the lack of housing, no question.
Okay. Now, you said you played golf. When you got in college or out of college?
I played a few times, I think, in college, but certainly not regularly until the early 80s, after I'd graduated from school a couple of years.
And what was your handicap, 25 or 26?
No, I think my first handicap was a 6.
That's why you like golf.
Well, sadly, I got a little better, and now I'm on the getting worse swing, and I'm back up to 6 again.
That's not bad. You should stay 6 for a long time. That's very good. Unless you have somebody here that gave you that handicap. Did
no,
I give it
no,
to
no,
you?
No, no, no,
or you earned it?
I earned that.
Okay. Have you had any engineering or architectural background?
I really didn't. In the Penn Station business, I always took graph paper, and certainly for the first 10 years or so, I laid out all the stores, all the equipment lines, etc., more out of necessity and the fact that I knew the line better than anybody else. So. Formally, no education, schooling in that regard, but School of Hard Knocks, I was forced to do some of that.
And why did you think you could design your own golf course?
I don't know. I guess I've always accepted the notion that nothing's that difficult. And most of it is about passion and common sense. If you're really into something and you really, really want to do it, you can do it. It just takes a little bit of hard work and like I said, passion.
That's the American attitude. That's what they started back in, what was it, 1776?
That's right. That's right.
Okay, let's start at the beginning and see what evolved in building your dream. Site selection. How did you go about picking a site?
Well, there are both business factors and there are land factors in selecting a site. It doesn't matter how good your piece of ground is, if you don't put it in a place that allows for it to be successful from a business standpoint, from an economic standpoint, you've wasted your time. Nobody wants to have a beautiful golf course and have it go out of business.
Well, you lose a lot of money, too.
Right. So I started actually in New Richmond and found some property in New Richmond, which I thought was just fabulous. But the fact is, it was close to the river. And in golf, you get about 80% of your customers from about a 20-minute radius. But I was cut off by the river, so I would only have half a circle rather than a full circle.
So there went Richmond.
New Richmond. So I moved out. And demographically, I wanted an upscale public course, so I needed to get closer not only to density of population, but also to a higher median income. And I came out Route 32 and Route 50, and just started going out Route 32 and out Route 50. And I ran across this piece of property here, and the rest of the ingredients, those that allow for a beautiful golf course, were here. And these are primarily topographic features. Uh-huh. It wasn't too hilly, yet it wasn't just a farm field. Okay. So it had a combination of rolling hills, steep parts and flat parts. There were soybean and corn fields, and the bulk of the property is heavily wooded. So, and those are all perfect physical circumstances to build and grow a golf course.
You do any research?
Oh, a lot of research. Informal, but research. I spent years driving around the country, probably specifically the couple of years before I built. And often I would go to these golf courses that were very hard to get on, and I'd find my way on one way or another. And 90% of the time I did not bring my golf clubs, but rather I brought a camera. And I would find my way onto the golf course before it opened, shoot a couple of rolls of film, uh-huh. and just think about design and then relate that to the books I read. And between the two, start to formulate what I thought were neat holes in my own mind.
So in other words, you're a quick study.
Oh, I don't know about that.
I think you were. What's topography have to do with? How important? You mentioned
well,
that
it's
before.
Huge. It's absolutely. I would say it's the number one factor.
Number one.
If you go into the hills in West Virginia and there's 3-to-1 inclines all over, how in the world are you ever going to build a golf course? Nobody wants to play golf on the side of a mountain. On the other hand, if you go into the flatter areas, for example, of Indiana, or even out here out Route 32, where there are huge soybean fields and corn fields, they're flat as a pancake. And that's a pretty featureless piece of ground. So the only way to manipulate that ground is mechanically, through bulldozers and equipment. And even the better architects taking a flat piece of ground and you move all that ground around, it looks to some degree contrived compared to what Mother Nature has left you. So if you can find rolling hills and there is some running water on the mm-hmm. property, that's the best of all circumstances.
Okay, then you have to make your roads, then you have to make your clubhouse, then you have to make your holes, okay? What came first, the chicken or the egg?
Well, I spent the winter of 1999-2000. I spent that winter first buying a big topographic map. I went to downtown Batavia for, I think, $10 or $11. Got a great big, like, 3x5 map of the entire property that I bought. It had all the topo lines on it and the vegetation. It was satellite shot.
And the elevations.
Yeah, topo is the elevations.
All right, okay, go ahead.
And it was satellite shot, so all the vegetation, and if there were any buildings that was on there, and roads, etc. And I laid tracing paper over the top of that, and I just kept sketching and sketching, you know, one piece of tracing paper after another, until I had driven, you know, had created a road in,
okay.
put a clubhouse facing due south, you know, not into the setting sun or the rising sun. So when you're on the back porch at the end of the day, the sun's not in your eyes.
Very good.
And then put the last two holes, number 9 and hole number 18, off the back porch to create a theater-like atmosphere.
So that's where you start and that's where you come back.
Well, you start on one, but yeah. if you're playing 9 holes, you finish on hole 9, which you can see from the back porch. If you play 18, you finish on the 18th hole. You can see the 18th okay. green finish. So you can sit on the porch, have a beer, and watch your buddies come in that are playing behind you. Mm-hmm. So I really, the road in situated the clubhouse, then the driving range, which had to be within walking distance of the clubhouse, hole 18 and 9, and then holes number 1 and 10, which also had to originate at the clubhouse, and then simply filled in the rest of the holes.
But how'd you know how long to make each hole?
You know, the answer to that question is just playing golf for 20 years prior to doing this. You know that the bulk of par 3s are 140 to 210 okay. yards, and par 4s are 300 to 480, etc.
And the dog legs in the water holes took care of themselves because of the topography?
They did to some degree. You never try to create something contrived. You don't take a piece of ground that gives you a left-to-right hole and put a right-to-left hole on it. But I was fortunate in that most courses are built, as I said earlier, on 140 acres. We had twice that, 273 acres. I was fortunate that I had enough flexibility with all the land that I had that if I wanted a certain number of dogleg rights and a certain number of dogleg lefts, I had enough room to move the holes around where I could find that. You never want a horse or a course, excuse me, that is yeah. one-dimensional, that is all dogleg lefts, all dogleg rights, that is all short par fours or all long par fours. You want uphill holes, downhill holes. You want holes into the prevailing wind, with the prevailing wind, into the sun, you know, away from the sun. Dogleg right, dogleg left, etc., etc. So balance is a big part of the initial design and the initial routing so that every golfer hopefully uses every club in their bag.
So you definitely have worked this out in your mind. Did you get any professional engineers or professional architects to help you?
Architects, no. Engineers, yes. There were issues related to building these lakes that I was unfamiliar with. You know, exactly what kind of ground went on the inside of the pond to create a liner effect and how big the structures were, the outflow structures, so that when the lake filled up, the water went out. And this guy helped me from McGill Smith Punchin, Jim Watson, helped me size the piping, etc. After doing 3 or 4 of the 9 lakes, I feel like I could have done it myself. It was really pretty easy. But most of it is you're calculating the watershed, how much water goes into a lake, and once you know the watershed and the size of the lake, you know the size of the outflow structures.
I tell you, you have got this in your mind. I think it was all there in the beginning, wasn't it?
I don't know about that.
Yes,
there's a lot
was.
Of learning to be done. That's
now,
for sure.
Did you, when you made the lakes, did you work out a scheme to get the balls out of there?
No, actually, I did some things that are contrary to ball retrieval. On the bottom of a couple of these lakes, the one off the back porch on 18, I actually had them take rocks that were probably 5 foot by 10 foot, and a couple of them I had them prop it up and stick another rock underneath it, knowing that I wanted to stock this with fish and the fish should have a place to hide. I really did that because when the guy came around that retrieves balls and talked to us last fall, we told him he'd have a hard time pulling baskets across the bottom of the lake because I knew I had done that here.
Uh-huh.
We want the fishing to be good.
The fishing was more important than him getting the golf balls.
It was to me.
Yeah, I
not to
see
him,
that.
I imagine. But
so what about a green? You know, that's got to have some plumbing. It's got to have some undersoil or whatever you call it. How'd you handle the green?
It's like so many other things you do in the business world, or at least it seems to me, and that is things seem so simplistic, and as you get into them, you realize how much more complex it is. And greens, most people thought, were just a bulldozer pushing a bunch of topsoil up in a pile and shaping it and then putting the cup in the middle. And in fact, the latest USGA, United States Golf Association, specifications for greens construction, they dig a greens well. You dig a hole out of the ground the size of the green that you want, about 17 or 18 inches deep. You put a herringbone pattern of drainage in the bottom, and then you put a pea gravel layer 4 inches over that, and then 12 or 13 inches of a sand and organic mix over the top of that, and then grow grass on the top of that. And the water actually percolates down through this organic mix into the drainage system.
And every green's made like that?
Absolutely, and the tees too.
And if you want to make a hilly green or a flat green, you mix them up?
You got it. That's right.
I hate to do this, but believe it or not, our halftime is here.
Okay.
We are talking to Jeff Osterfeld, who has accomplished, it's a done deal, and we'll talk about that later, of owning and operating his own golf course. We've been talking about high, where, when, why, our 18-hole golf course. And stay tuned. There's going to be a lot more. Let's take our break now. We'll be back with and continue our interview in just a couple of moments.